ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
If you were to get a second chance at life, is it your duty to live it to the fullest? For people waiting for a life-saving organ donation, this is something that they grapple with every day. Recently, actress and singer Selena Gomez copped a ton of criticism when she was photographed vaping years after getting a kidney transplant. And it left a lot of people wondering, what would her donor think? But who decides what a worthy life looks like after a gift like that? Because at any given time, there are around 1,850 people waiting for a transplant in Australia. So what's it like to navigate the donation process? And what does it take to convince someone to make a donation that not only changes someone else's life, but theirs as well? You'll hear from someone from Transplant Australia in just a tick. But first, Rochelle Coombs is one of the people on the donation wait list waiting for a pancreas and kidney transplant. Rochelle, when you first saw these pictures of Selena Gomez vaping, what did you think?
I mean, my first natural response was, let's not take it to the nth degree. Is this actually a concerning, you know, what is inside the vape was my first kind of reaction, because I know that a lot of people will just go to that first reaction. And then my second was, feel this feeling of, oh, like we don't need another reason now to make people not want to donate, right? Mm. The conversation is already so difficult, so nuanced. And I was really just kind of holding my breath to see the rhetoric online to make my own kind of assessment. And yeah, I think from what I saw from a lot of female influences in the media that were going out there was a really important conversation, which was around bodily autonomy, which you kind of touched on in the intro there. But it also missed a really important part, which is that this is like a gift. And when you give a living organ, it doesn't just change the life of the person, it changes the life of the person that's given it. And so what is that responsibility, or how should we kind of be dealing that with a little bit more nuance, I guess?
Yeah. So when you were reflecting on that, you decided to write about it. What do you think it was about your perspective that really helps you kind of understand it from a lot of different dimensions?
Yeah, I think, you know, prior to being on the organ donation list, I don't think I had, you know, near enough intelligence around what organ donation actually means, all the different ways that someone can donate. So you've got, you know, your living donors, your deceased donors, and then all of the conversations that happen around that. And so I've been living this, you know, for the last 2 years, I've been on the waiting list, and I still probably have roughly 1 year more. And so I've been having these conversations that not everyday people are having. And that's probably the biggest gap, is like, these are conversations we should be having, you know. It's like having the death conversation, and it's a very similar one that it's a little bit taboo. People don't want to really talk about it. But when you start to open up and have these truthful conversations, you're really unearthing these, you know, interior motives around why people would and would not donate. And I think that was a really interesting thing for me to see, because I'd never been as part of that conversation. So, and I think that's the really hard thing for people on the outside, unless you are going through that transplant process, or you have a loved one or a family member that has been on that waiting list. You really don't understand the difficulty and, you know, just everything that needs to go into those conversations around why someone would choose to donate, why they wouldn't, what the long-term requirements of that donation should be, and then, you know, the expectation on someone's life, as you kind of suggested.
I'm thinking about how those sorts of conversations might play out in my family if it was someone that I loved. And I know for you, there were people who were close to you who just offered to be living donors, and you didn't accept necessarily.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those difficult conversations, because you sit in the office and the doctor says to you, these are kind of your options, and you should go and start having these conversations. And this is a probably, if not the most awkward awkward conversations I've ever had in your life. I mean, people talk about job interviews being difficult, but interviewing people for a potential kind of organ donation conversation just felt like something that, you know, didn't come naturally to me, and no one really prepares you for this either. And that's the really difficult thing. There's not a lot of, in the healthcare system either, there's not a lot of support. They don't really say, like, here's kind of how you can go about it. There are guides, there are booklets, there are things online, but no one's really guiding you and navigating those conversations. So you're doing that on your own. And for me, I didn't ask. I didn't want to ask people because I felt guilty. I felt like I wasn't, you know, I didn't deserve it. And so I would just basically, you know, my conversations and my offers came through me just saying, oh, like letting family and close friends know what I was going through. And when I told them my story, that like two people in my life just offered it up naturally. Actually, my father did as well, but unfortunately my father was kind of like too old and he's had cancer, so he's unable to do that. And so I do think like that parent-child relationship feels a little bit easier. Like it feels easier to go to your parents and say, hey, Dad, do you want to give me an organ? That conversation for me felt quite easy, but with anyone else, like friends and like it felt very nuanced. And that's where these honest conversations came out, because I wasn't just asking people for things. I was actually finding out what their reasons were for and against. And, you know, I have best friends who are still not on the organ donation list. I have inspired many people now to be on it, but it is really hard, really nuanced. And so with those conversations with the two people, a friend and my cousin, they actually self-offered to me as part of the conversation. So that made it a little bit easier. But both of them, one was expecting a child and the other already had two children. And so this is where I say around that donation really changes more than one life. And for me, it felt, again, as I said to you, that parent-child relationship, if that child needed that organ in the future, because they're typically always a closer match, you're typically, you know, the same blood group and everything, I would feel guilty if I stole that child's life from them for my own. So I think it's really, really difficult.
It's interesting that you talk about basically people who in your life who either are or aren't on the donor registry. I'm about to bring into the chat Chris Thomas, CEO of Transplant Australia, but I also want to share some of the texts that you've sent me here on Life Matters on ABC Radio National. Richard in Melbourne says, I received a kidney transplant from a deceased donor to survive an inherited condition. When I was asked about how I changed my life, was it day to night? I responded, no. I think I was living a pretty good life beforehand, so what would I change? Richard says, I take care of myself and my extra kidney. Greg says, my brother has had a kidney transplant. He still has the occasional beer, and I don't think we should begrudge him that. He's had a tough life with chronic kidney disease. Well, Chris Thomas, you are with Transplant Australia. It's a charity that supports both recipients and organ donors going through this process. How concerned are the donors you support about what happens to their organ once it's in someone else?
Yeah, good morning, Tegan. Hi, Rochelle. How wonderful to be hearing the experience of Rochelle. And, you know, I'm a bit conflicted in all of this because on the one hand, we've got, Selena Gomez, and it's all about the celebrity. But it does give us the opportunity to talk about a really important sort of enduring long-term crisis in Australia. And, you know, that is that we've got increasing demand for transplanted organs. We've got a decreasing consent rate. And our living donor rate, which is what this is centred on today, is half of that in New Zealand. So there are some really important issues that we need to, as a society, you know, talk about. We don't really get a lot of donors coming to Transplant Australia, living donors in this instance, or donor families. Mm-hmm. Upset that the person who has received their transplant isn't honouring that, you know, that gift. We sort of really come from the opinion that a gift is a gift, and it should preconditions. Where does risk taking start and stop? A really good friend of mine, the first thing he did with his new liver transplant was go skydiving, because he always wanted to go skydiving. And you might say, that's crazy. You know, why would you do that? Like, you've just been given this, you know, and the hundreds of thousands of dollars that it took. But where do you start and stop? You know, in terms of Selena, just for a moment, I think, you know, celebrities are role models. I just wish she wasn't vaping full stop, regardless of the fact that she's a transplant recipient. You know, there are some really intricate sort of issues around vaping for transplant recipients. They have a lower immune suppression. And so there is this sort of, we don't have the data on it yet because vaping hasn't been around long enough, but there does appear to be sort of increased risk of fungal lung disease in people who are transplant recipients if they are vaping because of, you know, all the aerosols and so on. So, you know, all up, no, we shouldn't be in judgment. We shouldn't be making moral judgment. But I really would want people who were transplant recipients to be talking to their doctors to make sure that any type of risk behaviour isn't going to impact upon the organs.
Even skydiving. Rochelle, listening to that story about Chris's mate who jumped out of a plane after he got a transplant, like, what does that make you feel when you hear that story?
I mean, I absolutely love it because I think, like, there is that, you know, celebration feeling of feeling like you do have that second chance and what are you able to do? And to be honest, it's something I've thought about. I've not been allowed to do my snorkeling, scuba diving course. Yeah. Haven't been allowed to do that because of having long-term type 1 diabetes, retinopathy, and the kidney failure. And it's been something on my mind. I was like, you know, maybe this is my chance to kind of do that. And, you know, as Chris said, it's that where does the risk-taking start and stop and what parts are acceptable? And I think, you know, something that I thought about, you know, as part of it, and I do have, you know, like a background in kind of considering, you know, legal implications, is like, how do you set up a checklist between yourself and that living person to say, this is what my agreement is to you that I will and won't do, and making sure that you're really comfortable, because the last thing that you want to do is take that, you know, that organ for granted. And at the same time, it's like you want to preserve the friendship and that relationship, because who else in their right mind is going to give you an organ? Like, that is a huge thing that someone is giving up. So how do you kind of make it feel that it's comfortable between both of you and where that kind of starts and stops? And I think that might be, you know, a really interesting conversation, because then it is like, yes, I'm happy for you to go and live your life and, you know, do some of these risk-taking things, but then there's others that I don't. And I think, you know, as Chris said, like, the really bad thing about the vaping conversation is that the dangers of that, and that it's almost like a slap in the face, because we're already, you're not guaranteed that that organ, once it's transplanted, is going to be successful. That's the other thing. There's like a high chance of it not working. And if it doesn't, that person's already given up that opportunity. They can't take it back. They can't, you know, replant it again. So it's kind of like, if you've got that chance, you want to kind of hold on to it. And you don't want to have to be, as the person that's the recipient, to go back on that donation list. So I think it is really kind of, yeah, it is very nuanced, and it is like, where are we drawing the line? But having those discussions and being quite open, I think that's something that would make the donor and the recipient feel more comfortable.
You're listening to Life Matters here on ABC Radio National. I'm Tegan Taylor talking to Rochelle Coombs, who's waiting for a pancreas and kidney transplant, and Chris Thomas, who's the CEO of Transplant Australia, about pretty much the pressure that a transplant recipient has for the rest of their lives on honouring the gift of that organ that they've had donated to them. But Chris, I do want to talk about organ donor numbers in Australia, because you said before that it's lower than it needs to be. What are the barriers for people?
I think there's a lot of misconceptions still around, you know, the safety of our hospital systems, especially, you know, in multicultural communities and, you know, Indigenous communities. We often see that people actually bring their donation rate with them from overseas when they emigrate to Australia. So if you've come from a country where, you know, donation or even, you know, the quality of your healthcare system is not of the same standard that it is in Australia, you know, it takes many years to break down those barriers and those misconceptions and so on. And so the government, groups like Transplant Australia, we're doing a lot more work in our multicultural communities because, you know, they don't support donation as much, but in the same instance, sometimes they're more likely to need a transplant. There's a whole issue around tissue typing. So if you're waiting for a transplant, you're more likely to rise to the top of the list if someone of your same genetic, you know, background is actually, you know, donating. So we need all of Australia, and I think it really is a community responsibility. You know, we can't rely on governments. We need the voices of Rochelle, of people like Rochelle, and people who have received a transplant, and even donor families. You know, they're the ones who sign up for this, or living donors. They're the ones who graciously, you know, agree to give an organ. So we need those voices out there. This is obviously a wonderful opportunity to talk about it. We can do some practical things as well. Everybody listening will say, but hang on my driver's license. Well, it actually hasn't been on the driver's license for about 15 years. And we're trying to work with the state governments to get the opportunity to register back onto the driver's license. When you have that, you know, you're 17 years old, you're all excited, you're getting your driver's license for the first time. And we had this one moment where we could, you know, interrupt that psyche, interrupt that thinking and say, what do you think about, you know, organ donation? And then every 10 years remind people to you know, continue their decision to be on the register. We took that off about 15 years ago in favour of a national register, and unfortunately it was the wrong decision. We just haven't been able to increase the registration rates to where they need to get to. So only 36%, you know, one in three adult Australians, you know, are registered.
It's a conversation you're having with your family. Sorry to talk over the top of you, Chris, there. We are running short on time, but I really wanted to come to Rochelle and just ask about how you envisage the day that you finally get the call, that they go, okay, you, it's time, you're getting your transplant.
God, you just made me well up there in that moment. you know, I've thought about this quite often, you know, what is that moment going to feel like? Who's going to be around me during that moment? What, you know, how it will change my life forever? Because, you know, there's a lot of things as well that I've been imagining and thinking, like, what do I want to do in my body as it is today before I take on, you know, my, I keep calling it like my engine rebuild, basically. So, you know, there are lots of things that I think are going to go through my mind. I think definitely the biggest thing is recognizing, you know, this amazing gift that I've been given. And as, you know, I've been writing about from my own experience, and this is not the expectation of others. I know through the texts of other people, like, I was living a relatively amazing, great life before. I was moving too fast. So this has made me re-question and say, well, now I actually appreciate life for what it is, like my health and all of those things, in a different way than I did before this transplant. And so I think at that point of getting the transplant, it's like almost that drawing that line in the sand and being like, this is really my second chance at life. And, you know, I there's no expectation that anyone else needs to live their life like this. But for me, it was, how can I be more altruistic? How can I give back to my community? How can I educate people? How can I use this as a serving or a way? You know, there's, you know, this concept of benefit finding when you are ill. And for me, the benefit finding was, how do I stop other young women from having to suffer or to get to this point or to not have, you know, the organs or the tissue or the blood? And, you know, the women's health conversation is at its peak at the moment. But how do we increase awareness and, you know, understanding of just the ongoing impacts of things, you know, and the need for organs and tissues and that type of thing? So I think that moment of, you know, once that finally happens to me is really, you know, this line in the sand for me to be like, well, this is my second opportunity at life. Like, what can we do with this? And how can we, you know, live our life better, I suppose? And it's not about being healthier or taking less risk or whatever. It's just about, how can I give back to the community in the way that the community has given back to me, the same way.
Rochelle, thank you so much for sharing your story today. Thank you as well, Chris Thomas. Rochelle is waiting for a pancreas and kidney transplant. Chris Thomas is the CEO of Transplant Australia, a charity that supports both recipients and organ donors going through this process.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.